You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Today we are in Roccaraso.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora.
Dove siamo, Lionel?
We are in Roccaraso.
Have you said that right?
I have. I've been practicing because I got a D- from our head of linguistics, Daniel Freeb, for my pronunciation of this ski resort's name a couple of days ago in the podcast. To be fair, I didn't have it in front of me written down, so I wasn't terribly familiar with it a couple of days ago, but I have spent all afternoon, like an opera singer warming up, I've been practicing that. So if it's wrong, I've just embedded the wrong pronunciation. Sorry about that, Daniel, if you're listening.
Well, my name is Rich Moore, that was Lionel Burney, and we're joined tonight by Sophie Smith.
Good evening, thank you for having me.
Sophie Smith, gun for hire, you're a freelance journalist working here at the Giro and at most big bike races. Sophie, you made the long journey over from Australia, you're living back there now, aren't you?
I am at the moment. I'm going to be based in London for the summer just to make transportation slightly easier. It was 25 hours over a few weeks ago, but based back in Australia now. It's great for the summer, but it's nice to be back in Europe where all the action is.
It's nice to be here for the summer, isn't it? Freezing today.
Yes, it wasn't the best day to wear a skirt.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. It's at a category two. Was it a category two mountaintop finish today? I didn't think it'd be a ski resort.
I don't think any of us expected this, did we? I mean, we've spoken a couple of times about the fact this is our first time south of Rome on the mainland, and this is not what I expected. That it's mountainous. It's it feels. I was chatting to Rob Hatch, Eurosport, earlier, and he said that when he was here, it reminds him of Japan. That is true. It does feel like Japan. I didn't expect to find a ski resort up here, but that's where we are, and it's very dramatic. I mean, today was a funny stage, wasn't it? We should probably talk about the stage at some point. We'll hear later on from Matt White, who talks about this as well, and we'll hear from several other people as well. We've got Rory Sutherland, a bit of Mikel Landa, quite a lot of Matt White. We've got, of course, The Shark's Tale, the latest installment of Vincenzo Nibali's autobiography. That's really taking a surreal turn.
Should you say, the Gremlins got in the editing machine yesterday, and unfortunately The Shark's Tale was omitted from the episode initially. It was fixed very quickly.
As were the interviews.
But if you had any problems yesterday, just delete your cycling podcast feed from your device and then reinstall it, or delete the episode and reinstall it, depending on what device you're using, and you will be able to listen to the episode in full. Sorry about that. We will flog the guilty party soundly on our return to London.
Heads have rolled already, haven't they? No, we're sorry about that, but hopefully it was just a minor glitch in this smooth running operation that is the cycling podcast. So, Lionel, can you give us a summary of the stage?
I can. The Daily Tale of the Tappa, stage 6 from Ponte to Roccaraso in the Apennines. The weather this morning was terrible in Ponte, wasn't it? Cold and heavy rain, and we thought we were going to be in for a bit of an epic maybe, but it actually brightened up a little bit. They did get rained on a couple of times, but it wasn't as bad as we thought. Tim Wellens of Lotto Soudal made it a great couple of days for the Belgian team, winning 24 hours after his teammate André Greipel. And they plotted their way to victory very well, didn't they? Wellens and Pem Legthart got together and broke clear with Laurent Didier of Trek. And they joined two riders from an earlier breakaway, Alessandro Bisolti of Vinifantini and Ujet Zupa of Willia Tristina Southeast. And they built a good lead. It was still 5 minutes 50 with 50 kilometres to go. But instead of coming down, it was quite unusual, wasn't it? Because the gap actually went back out again as the GC teams let it go. There was a bit of a half-hearted chase by Lamprey, presumably for Diego Ulissi. Perhaps they thought they could pull off a miracle of Castel di Sangro. Just a nod to Joe McGuinness's book about the Serie B football team from the mid-90s. But there was no miracle on the climb. Up front, Didier was the first to attack, but Tim Wellens caught and passed him easily and pressed on for his Grand Tour stage win, his first Grand Tour stage win. But the real drama was behind, and we'll discuss all that in the rest of the show. In brief, Jakob Fuglsang looked much better than his Astana teammate Vincenzo Nibali. At one point, the Dane was the virtual leader on the road, but Tom Dumoulin, probably the star of the day, gained a few more seconds with an attack at the end. And it was one of those days when it was good for some GC riders, bad for others. But we'll get to that in the later part of the episode.
Well, and you mentioned the miracle of Castel di Sangro, the Joe McGuinness book. It's a fantastic book. And it really, you know, it was funny driving through there today, which we did just before the climb. It's exactly really as he described it. It's a sort of one horse town. And he spent a year there with the football club. And I was thinking about today's stage, and it looked like not a lot was happening. I was thinking we were probably going to speak about that quite a lot. It's quite a dark story in the end. It's comic and dark, and it's highly recommended. But actually, and a lot of people I see are sort of describing this stage as a bit of a damp squib, but quite a lot did happen today. And the final climb was quite, you don't know if it's revealing or not, because the first climb in a grand tour can sometimes be misleading. And especially maybe in weather like this as well, some guys struggle with that. But it was quite interesting, and something that Tim Wellens said in his press conference made it even more interesting. Sophie, was that your impression today? Did you think it revealed much today, this stage?
I don't think it revealed as much as, well, certainly what I anticipated and what some teams anticipated. I spoke to Nicholas Roche from Team Sky yesterday, and he billed this stage as the first real big test for the GC hitters. And so did Orica Greenedge. And going back to both riders today, or both people today, Matt White is the sports director from Orica Greenedge. He certainly just said it wasn't what he expected in terms of tactics and how it played out.
Funny you should mention him, Sophie, because Lionel did speak to Matt White at the finish, didn't you? We're going to hear a couple of times from Matt White because he said a couple of things that were quite interesting. Let's hear him just now talking about the stage, their approach to the stage.
Yeah, I think the stage in general is probably a little bit underwhelming. No one reconnaissance the whole tour, the whole Giro. We did get that information an hour before, but look, on the profile, it looked like quite a hard climb, maybe a battle for the first big hit out for the GC guys, and it didn't eventuate like that with the wind and the terrain. As far as our point of view, we wanted to have a go for the stage win today. Didn't get any help, so we called the boys off at the same time as I got that information, and as it wasn't as hard a climb as we thought. And then, yeah, when you've got good legs, why not take it? So we took a couple of seconds today. In the big picture, that may or may not matter, but Esteban's feeling good, and so we took some.
What was the wind doing out there then?
Yeah, there was a lot more tailwind on the climb than expected as well. And then we had a big temperature change today from 22 degrees to 8 degrees, but we were prepared for that as well. So in the end, it was a good day out.
Interesting, Matt White there, the sports director of Orica Greenedge, saying that not every big team recces every stage of a race like the Giro when it's the second biggest Grand Tour of the year. So they rely on team staff driving ahead on the course to phone back and tell them what the climb is like, and they react and make their race tactics up on the hoof there. And Esteban Chavez, their leader, who was fifth in last year's Vuelta, is their undisputed leader here, going for GC. And as Matt said, gained a few crucial seconds at the end today.
The big climb he was talking about was the Bocca della Selva, which we drove over. I don't know if there were TV pictures for that because there were problems with the helicopter today with the rain. We drove over that, and it was a, you know, fairly grippy climb, but we were more concerned about the descent. The descent looked really nasty. There were a lot of wet leaves there, and the road was, as they tend to be down here in the south of Italy, pretty poor, very, very bumpy.
Here's Matt White again.
No, we did have that information, and actually Movistar railed the descent, which I was very surprised. I understand everyone wants to have their leader in the front, but they took a lot of risks, and I think it was a pretty silly move.
I mean, was there any sort of repercussions from that? Were there angry words in the bunch?
The bunch split to pieces, so there's no need to take risks. It was certainly not a crucial part of the race, and the whole peloton knew that it was a dangerous descent. So anyway, teams have different tactics, and sometimes it leaves you scratching your head.
So Matt White scratching his head. A bit annoyed, I think, at Movistar's tactics on the descent. And as I said earlier, when we drove down there, and I think you drove there as well, Sophie, didn't you? It was really nasty looking. And if Movistar rode as hard as they did, it's surprising that there wasn't a crash there. It reminded me a little bit of the first week of the Giro in 2013, when there were a lot of wet stages on tricky descents like that, and Bradley Wiggins had a very hard time, crashed several times, and lost all confidence, and you know, hurt himself a bit and withdrew from the race. And it can be a way of eliminating people, and perhaps that was the Movistar game plan today.
I think it would have been in their interest, in Movistar's interest, to make it an aggressive race, particularly if they were riding for Valverde. But certainly, having seen that descent myself, you mentioned before there were leaves all over it, I would have thought that most teams would have gone through very conservatively, because there were narrow roads as well. And with the course that finished on the descent, like after the descent, it was quite flat for a very long time. So I'm not sure how much they could have feasibly split the peloton on that descent and then maintained it thereafter.
That's a really good point. It was a long way. There was a long sort of valley to the finish, and Matt White talked a little bit about the wind as well, and there was a tailwind, and that you know, well, it was perhaps a strange move, but perhaps designed to eliminate somebody.
Or just ramp up the stress on people. You know, that's what a Grand Tour is, isn't it? It's a gradual chipping away. If you can give somebody an uncomfortable day when Valverde is having a relatively comfortable day, then you're gaining a very small advantage. Rich, we had this debate about whether every second counts.
We had a furious argument last night by email when we were both in our respective bedrooms, Lionel.
Emailing across the corridor. I mean, this an insight into the workings of the cycling podcast that people really don't need.
And Lionel's passive-aggressive sort of responses to my perfectly reasonable
questions. You started it, Richard.
Well, anyway, we'll get on to that. Anyway. We'll get on to that later because it was quite, I think, an interesting discussion, or maybe just for us, I don't know. But Sophie might have a point of view on it as
I think Sophie should decide.
She will. Yeah. She will decide at the end.
Email.
We'll have we'll need the emails.
Research.
Full transparency. But listen, we did, one of the things we talked about last night was Alejandro Valverde, who nicked 4 seconds on all the other GC contenders yesterday, and that was the root of our heated debate, Lionel. But we, in talking about that and talking about Valverde, we realised we hadn't talked about Valverde an awful lot. We hadn't talked about Movistar an awful lot. They're a team that can be quite hard to penetrate. There is an Australian on the team, Rory Sutherland, and you went and spoke to him this morning, didn't you?
Yeah, let's hear from Rory first. Rory, it's the first uphill finish in the Giro today. And what's the mood like on the Movistar bus this morning?
Same as always. Fun, happiness. One of the beauties of this team is no one overthinks things. It's just it's a bike race like any other day.
Can you give away a little bit of info from the team talk this morning? What's going to be the game plan, do you think?
No, as usual for the whole Giro, is Alejandro and Andre to make sure they're in a good position. And, you know, we have to see after the first mountain, if you know, the first mountain of the day, what the mood is in the peloton, I guess that's the big thing, and then you make a decision on the road as you go.
The weather, the rain doesn't dampen spirits at all?
I think it does for everyone, but it is for everyone. Would I rather ride in the sun? Most certainly. But it is what it is.
For our English listeners who perhaps don't know Alejandro very well, describe him as a teammate and as a leader.
He's pretty funny actually. he's 36 years old, but he's a big kid. You know, he's very respectful to his teammates and very passionate about cycling. You know, between him and Alberto Contador are probably the two riders I've seen that are just, they just want to race. You know, they want to attack, they want to win. You know, they have such a passion for winning and attacking. You know, sometimes it's too much.
Did he say anything particular on a morning like this, you know, to his teammates, or is it just a case that he trusts that you guys know what you've got to do?
No, he knows that we're here for him, and, you know, at the end of the day, it's his job to be in the right position and see what happens. But he's, you know, he's going pretty well right now, so, you know, we'll just have to see what happens.
So it sounds like a happy camp, Movistar.
Well, yeah, it does. Sounds great fun.
You know,
the party bus.
Very, very relaxed in the mornings. A little bit less relaxed this evening. Rory wasn't in quite as high spirits when he came back to the bus. He brushed me off a little bit, but maybe they had a tougher day than they had anticipated. Talking about Valverde, you know, and the fact he's gone under the radar as far as we've been concerned, that's probably ideal for him in the first week because he's playing the long game. The riders who, they want to come on strong in the final week, as we've said so often. And for Valverde, you know, this is his first Giro d'Italia, so it's kind of all new for him. I'm not saying that, you know, he's got bags of experience in Grand Tours, but it does have a different feel to it, the sort of stresses and strains and the kind of the way it works, and the certainly the scrum after the finish is a little... Although the Tour de France is huge, there's a level of anarchy here at the Giro, isn't there, where the fans really do get in the riders' faces and, you know, bidons are getting nicked off people's bikes as they're coming back into the team bus area.
I was talking to the press attaché, Phoebe at BMC, who said that they had somebody walk onto their bus. And yeah, bidons are taken. Joe Dombrowski the other day, a kid asked him for his gloves, his mitts, just before he started the stage. So yeah, but we were talking about this as well, Lionel, and this is going off today's stage a bit. We will come back to that, I promise. That there's this I think there's a perception that cycling isn't as popular in the south as it is in the north, and we have seen an incredible passion for the Giro here. We stopped on the course along the way. I mean, along the course there are pink balloons everywhere. There's a lot of signs up for Pantani, for Nibali. There were drawings of sharks. One looked quite like a dolphin, in my view. We stopped in a little bar. They were showing old footage of the Giro d'Italia from the 1950s copy, and you know, we were comparing that with, although cycling might be struggling in Italy, relatively speaking, there's still that rich history. It's sort of woven into the fabric of the place in a way that it certainly isn't where we come from.
Absolutely. And just on Valverde, because he has had a bit of an aversion to racing in Italy. Really, if you look at his career, he's only really done Milan-San Remo, Strada Bianchi, and a couple of times Tirreno-Adriatico. In fact, there was a period of his career where he was actively avoiding Italy, because back when the Operation Puerto doping investigation was going on, the Italian anti-doping authorities were trying to jigsaw identify Valverde's blood bags as being one of Dr. Eufemiano Fuentes' clients, and they wanted Valverde to come to Italy so they could test him, get a blood sample, and prove that he had been part of the Operation Puerto scandal. And there was a 2008 Tour de France, wasn't there, with a stage which went to Prato Nervoso in Italy, and there was all that speculation about whether Valverde would stop at the border or carry on. As it was, he carried on, completed the race, but he took his ban a couple of, later that year, I think it was, wasn't it? He had his results wiped out and all that. But anyway, just felt like I had to mention that while we're talking about Valverde.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Thank you very much to Eurosport, who, along with Science and Sport, sponsoring us here at the Giro d'Italia. And they, Eurosport that is, are every day sponsoring our Pedlar de Charme Award. And we've awarded a couple of T-shirts. Today's lucky recipient was Daniel Oss, who looked thrilled to receive his T-shirt. That was for yesterday. So we've got today's Pedlar de Charme to decide upon. Quite a few nominations on Twitter. If you send your nominations with the hashtag PDCGiro, that would be great. Sophie, you can have the casting vote on who should receive Pedlar de Charme T-shirt, the coveted Pedlar de Charme. We might even dispatch you with a T-shirt tomorrow. Save us the hassle. And you can go off armed with your little camera phone and present the T-shirt and get a photograph if you like.
I'd be happy to do that. I am going to award it as well to the current white jersey, Bob Jungels. He was 13th today, and I think he's had a really great start to the Giro. He's been really strong up there with the big contenders, and I'd like to see what he does in Sunday's time trial too.
He's been riding very well. I mean, let's not forget that he was a big part of the Marcel Kittel train as well, so he's been pretty full on every stage. He's a very strong time trialist, and, you know, he's quite a big lad, but he can clearly climb pretty well to be up there in that sort of company today. Let's talk about the stage and the stage winner, Tim Wellens, because fantastic win by him. A lot of nominations for him for Pedlar de Charme, actually. Looks pedals very charmingly, very stylish rider, very promising young Belgian. And he took a fine victory, and he's a highly rated rider. But he said a very interesting thing in the press conference when he was asked about his attack. He said that he'd been riding along the bunch and he'd been approached by Tom Dumoulin, who of course rides for a rival team and is in the pink jersey. And he said, now is the time to attack, Tim. He was basically telling him to attack. Now, this was very strange, and I think a few of us in the press conference thought we'd misheard him, because he said that he didn't feel like attacking at that time. And about 5 kilometres later, his teammate Pim Ligthart came up and said, let's go. So maybe Dumoulin had been speaking to him as well. I'm not sure. We'd have to check that. But it was a very odd thing. And my ears certainly pricked up. And I wanted to find out a bit more about this. And about, there's two aspects to it, I suppose. One is, what's the personal relationship that they have? Could it just be friendship, that Dumoulin thought it was a good opportunity for his pal to take a stage? Or did Dumoulin think that Tim Wellens going up the road might somehow help him? So I asked Tim Wellens about his relationship with Dumoulin. Here's what he said.
Last year, I was invited to the Amstel Curaçao race in Curaçao. We spent a lot of time together. That's why Tom and me, we know each other.
So it's interesting that, you know, that he was giving you advice today. Do you get the sense that his ambitions here go beyond just the time trials?
It's very possible. He's riding extremely strong. He also has a good team to help him. Yes, I hope he stays as long as possible in the pink jersey and maybe to the end.
So that was Tim Wellens saying that he and Dumoulin struck up quite a friendship in the Caribbean at the end of last year. But it's interesting, isn't it? And he obviously thinks that Dumoulin, when he says that he's not aiming for general classification here, is perhaps bluffing. And I think it's also interesting to note what Dumoulin himself said in his press conference, because he's been asked several times, look, are you here just for the time trials, as you say, or are you here to try and go for GC? And he got a bit irritated a couple of times the first few days, saying, I don't know how many times I have to repeat myself, I'm not here for GC. Today he was far more equivocal on that, and he said that he talked about the other guys as his GC rivals rather than just, you know, other, you know, the favourites, as he's referred to them before. He was asked whether the time trial would be an opportunity for him to sort of lay down a marker, make a statement, and build, gain a bigger advantage that he would then be able to defend the mountains. He said, yes, maybe. And he was certainly interested in the tactics of Astana on the stage when they sent Jakob Fuglsang up the road. As you mentioned, Lionel, he was a threat at one point to the pink jersey. He was, I think, far more equivocal on exactly what he's here for. It doesn't really matter. I think that, you know, he can afford to just play whatever cards he's dealt to some extent. He will go out there every day and defend his jersey and see how he gets on the high mountains. It's very similar to his approach in the Vuelta last year. I don't know, what do you think, Sophie? Because we've not heard your view on this. What's your view on Dumoulin? Is he going to basically confirm here what he showed at the Vuelta last year? Or is it, as he says, a step back in order to take a bigger step forward sometime in the future?
Like you said, he's been unequivocal in that, you know, he's here just for stage opportunities. And the Giant Alpecin sports director, Mark Reeves, said the same thing. Dumoulin had his shot at GC at Romandy. That's not to say, though, I mean, he said in yesterday's press conference that he wanted to have the jersey for at least a week and a half. And I guess in not confirming anything now, he's not putting any pressure on himself, is he? So he's not sure of how he's going to be in the high mountains, because he said he hasn't done any high mountain training, nothing at altitude. But certainly I think a lot of people in the peloton believe he's bluffing. And then again, today's tactic was weird. I actually would have put him down as a potential stage winner today. So whether Giant just thought they weren't going to get any help to bring the break back, so it wasn't worth wasting energy and perhaps being down for the next couple of days, I don't know. I believe him actually when he says he's not going for the title. But I think he'll hold on for as long as he can to get the best result he can on GC.
You spoke to Matt White, as we said, we've heard a couple of times already, Lionel, and he had something to say as well about his own rider, Chavez, and also Dumoulin.
Oh, he's not bluffing anyone here. He's full of it. He's class. He's a class bike rider, and he's here to ride general classification. It's just the way he thinks, taking a little bit of the pressure off himself and his team. But look, he's in one of the most coveted jerseys in cycling, and he'll want to keep that as long as possible. And he's riding as we predicted, and I expect to see him in the top 5 or top 10 for sure at the end of 3 weeks.
I don't want to pile any pressure on your young rider, your team leader, but what are you really looking for? Are you looking for high overall, or are you looking for a stage win?
With Esteban? Well, we've made it quite clear we're going for general classification. Top 10 is a definite goal, and we'll see how we go from here. But yeah, we Esteban is in great shape, and we want to capitalise off last year's experience at the Vuelta and top 10. Oh, as high as possible is what we're aiming for.
And do you have to curb a bit of attacking instinct, a bit of aggression in him? And because to ride for a high overall position, you have to rail it in sometimes and just play the patient game?
Look, there's a time and a place, for sure. But, you know, inside the last 500 or 600 metres on a hilltop finish, how much energy are you wasting? And, you know, he proved that he gained some seconds today. So, look, that's his style of racing. But there is definitely a time and a place.
I mean, Matt White said there that Dumoulin has a strong team. I'm not sure how strong his team is. That was a big problem for him at the Vuelta last year. He was a bit isolated at the end today, whereas we saw Astana obviously had strength in numbers. Movistar were pretty strong. Team Sky pretty strong as well. Their leaders aren't perhaps firing on all cylinders quite yet. But, you know, that could be a problem for him. What isn't a problem is he's clearly in great form. I mean, we saw today a classic Vincenzo Nibali attack. It was a bit like one of his attacks over the Cipressa in the in Milan San Remo, doomed to failure, but looks really impressive, gets accommodated, really excited.
Yeah, went off like a rocket and then fizzed like a sparkler, didn't he, unfortunately, if that's a fireworks night reference. But you've got to love Nibali for that. I mean, the first chance to test his legs, and he always looks like a man who... He doesn't exude confidence, does he, when he's his sort of facial expressions and the way I see him moving about. I don't know. I don't look at him and think that is a man who is entirely confident in his sort of, you know, condition and ability and everything. I imagine, and we're hearing from the shark's tail, of course, daily, that perhaps these doubts are, you know, the cracks are there to exploit.
Shark, how can you say such a thing about the shark? He exudes confidence.
He has to keep moving forward or else he will suffocate. Or is that dolphins or is that fish? I don't know. Sure, I don't know. I'm not.
Well, he was going backwards at one point today, so he could be in a bit of trouble. But Nibali, not very impressive. I mean, we you know, it's one of these stages we don't really know what to make of it, but he's finished 1:43 down on Tim Wellens, but he lost a good 20-odd seconds to the likes of Dumoulin, you know, and really he shouldn't, especially over that, in that sort of terrain. Look at the guys who were up there, Rigobert Urán, he'll be pretty happy, Rafał Majka, these are the sort of B-list GC contenders, aren't they? Valverde, 1:36, he was 3 seconds down on even Urán, and Chavez as well, as Matt White said, nicked a couple of seconds at the end there. He rode well. But there's Bob Jungels ahead of Mikel Landa. It's surprising, isn't it?
And somebody we haven't mentioned and who rode very strongly today, Ilnur Zakarin of Katusha, who has looked very good already this season in a couple of races, and first opportunity to show something.
Up
and
to third overall.
Something. Yeah, exactly, third overall, and already looking like he could be a threat, certainly for the podium. And as we've talked about, Richard, well, I think we both agree now after difficult 12 hours. Every second counts in the Grand Tours.
24 hours, actually. We'll get on to that in the final part. I think, having spoken a little bit Nibali, maybe it's time for...
Cosa mi stava succedendo? Era come se un fiume, ridotto l'inverno a stagnare da un ammasso di pietre e rammaglia, fossi stato infine graziato dalla piena di primavera, trovando la forza bastante a spazzare via la barriera per ingrossarsi di spuma e riprendere il corso impetuoso lanciato alla volta del mare. «Squalo?» domandò Valerio quando la ragazza si fu allontanata. «Ci sei ancora, squalo?»
It was as though a river choked all winter by old branches and stones had finally been graced by the flush of spring, finding the force to wipe away the barrier, to froth and foam and continue its raging course towards the sea. «Shark?» Valerio asked when the girl had gone. Are you still there, Shark?
These clips are getting longer. By the end of the Grand Tour, we're going to have sort of a page or a chapter being read out, aren't we, by Daniel? A whole... I can already hear the audiobook contract being signed.
But no, it's great stuff, and you know, I'm really getting into it. I go to bed looking forward to the next day's instalment and wake up excited that it's a little bit closer. What are you making of the shark's tail, Sophie?
Is that before or after the passive-aggressive exchange with Lionel?
Oh, we're going to get onto that, don't worry.
I'm working on my Italian, so I do like Daniel's pronunciation. It's something to aspire to. But I'm relying on the English version at the moment. Very entertaining, though.
Well done, Daniel. There you are. Thumbs up from Sophie.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for sponsoring us at this Giro d'Italia. For all your sports nutrition needs, there's 20% off for podcast listeners if you go to scienceandsport.com and get 20% off all products if you enter the code SIS20. That's SIS20. And thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport. We will be working later in this Giro on a special kilometre zero on nutrition, on nutrition in a race like the Giro. Speaking to nutritionists, riders and so on, and that should be quite an interesting insight into that. We've released 2 kilometre zero episodes already, one on the North-South Divide, which was really fascinating. Daniel's work, really good. And we've got one coming tomorrow as well, haven't we, Lionel?
Yeah, we have. A look back at the opening weekend in the Netherlands through the eyes of Martin Cilinghi, really. He was on the attack for around about 350 kilometres over the course of 2 days. And he's a really interesting chap. And we'll find out a bit more about him in Kilometre Zero Episode 3, which will be released on Friday morning.
Yeah, and if you want even more stuff to listen to, you can become a friend of the Cycling Podcast for exclusive content. We are, as I mentioned last night, working on a little Tom Dumoulin special that will be released next week for friends of the podcast. It's £10 for the year. Go to www.thecyclingpodcast.com. Looking at the results, there's our diarist, Joe Dombrowski, who's doing an audio diary for friends of the podcast. And he rode well today, 23rd on the stage in that sort of league group. So he did a good job today for Rigoberto Urán. But let's go get on to our little disagreement last night, because we recorded the podcast last night looking only at the provisional results sheet. The official results hadn't been released yet. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time for that to for those to appear, and in the provisional results the lead group were all given the same time. In the official results that were released a bit later, there was a split, and Alejandro Valverde was the last man in the front group. I think he was about 13th on the stage, and he therefore gained 4 seconds on all the other GC contenders. And Lionel's argument, well, Lionel, you can express your argument perhaps, but better than you did last night.
Well, I mean, your point was that we neglected to mention that Valverde had gained 4 seconds over everybody else in what looked like an innocuous split. And I think, first of all, just to explain how the splits are calculated, the time is taken from the first rider of the first group, that was Andre Greipel, and the time lapse to the first rider of the second group. It's not the gap between the last rider in the first group and the first rider in the second group. So that gap on, you know, when you watch on TV, looks like a pretty small gap. But of course, they're taking the time from Greipel. They're counting that as the first group. And so it's one of those ones that often you do see in the Tour or the Giro, the, you know, the results get adjusted, or, you know, you kind of miss it.
You don't see that one, because 1 second is quite a long way, you know, at that speed.
Well, 1 second going up that little, because it was after the drag, wasn't it? Yeah, it probably was a you know, it was daylight. I mean, it's got to be daylight, hasn't it? It's got to be a gap of 1 second when they come over the line. And that hand,
well, it doesn't have to be daylight. It just has to be a gap of one second. It could be dark. It could be a nocturne.
So Valverde gained 4 seconds yesterday, and my point was that in the grand scheme of things, are those 4 seconds going to count? And of course, if the Giro is decided by 3 seconds, then yes.
Valverde won the Giro yesterday.
Clearly. But then you have a daylight today, and all the seconds, they obviously do count, because the race is a cumulative, it's a race of time, isn't it? And I suppose I concede your point, every second does count, but I'm not necessarily sure that it was a huge talking point yesterday. That was my argument.
My argument was that it was quite significant, because it sort of shows, you know, Valverde is at the front of the race, and if you're riding well, you're at the front of the race. But the time as well is also can be significant, especially these days where, you know, races are won by smaller and smaller margins, it seems, and placings are decided by smaller and smaller margins. Partly that has been the case at the Tour de France with the, you know, fewer time trials. That has an impact on that. But we've seen the Giro decided by very few seconds. Ryder Hesjedal in 2012 won the Giro by a very small margin indeed. So, you know, that 4 seconds, I do think it matters. But then again, Valverde pretty much lost it today. So,
well, he lost 3 of those seconds. And if you're going to, yeah, if you mention every single second gained and lost, I mean, Ilner Zakarin gained another 4 seconds as well as the time he gained from that little split, because he got a time bonus for finishing third on the stage. And, you know, a Grand Tour, keeping an eye on the tiny parts of the picture is actually, you know, the bigger picture is the kind of the one that really counts. And I think that's your most valid point, is that the fact that Valverde was ahead of that split showed that he was alert, springy legs, looking good. Let's just leave it there.
In the right place. Who was right, Sophie? Where do your sympathies lie on this one?
I'd actually agree with you, Richard. Sorry, Lionel. Just because, I mean, if you look back in history, I mean, the example that came to my mind was the Tour de France last year with Geraint Thomas. Okay, granted, we're not talking about a podium here, but he will himself tell you that the difference between him and Warren Bargill, who was the rider that may or may not have caused him to fall off into a ravine, was the time it took him to recover from getting out of that ravine and going to the finish. So in that sort of context, I do think, yeah, okay, I don't think you can sit here and count every second, every stage, but you never know. We could be sitting here in 2 weeks' time saying, Valverde won the Giro or got an X amount of place from...
In which case, we're going to have to replay this with a bit of that harp music, and I'll talk to you from home. You can replay me being utterly wrong.
Yeah, that would be quite funny, wouldn't it? Yeah, yeah. I would enjoy that a lot. Well, Sophie, when we originally asked you to join us today, we were hoping for a bit of Aussie insight. There were a lot of talking points, I think, from today's stage, so we've gone on a bit. But have you been speaking in particular to some of the Aussies? And there are quite a few on the race. There are no British riders on the race, but there are quite a few Aussie riders. Have you been speaking to them? And can you give us any insight into how those guys are getting on?
Yeah, there's 10 Aussie riders, I think, on the start list this year across multiple teams. A lot of them are here to do a job for someone. So obviously there's a few of Orica Greenedge, we've already mentioned, working for Chavez. What opportunities they get themselves. I think Matt White, it said even in Sunday's time trial, they're all going to be told to ride conservatively, except for maybe Damien Housen. Jay McCarthy's here working for Rafael Majka at Tinkoff. Younger guys, which is nice to see, and all coming through mainly with overarching team goals, but also if they get their own opportunities, maybe a free roll, depending on how the race pans out before the high mountains.
We mentioned him yesterday, but what about Adam Hansen and his incredible run of Grand Tours?
It's a personal record for him, isn't it? It's something he talks about it sort of quite casually, but it is something I think he's quite proud of. It's on the stem of his bike. And for him, he's a different Aussie. He lives in the Czech Republic. He doesn't stay in any sort of expat central areas. And he just prefers it over training. He says he doesn't like training, he prefers racing, and he gets what he needs out of Grand Tour racing for other people.
Yeah, nine weeks of the year, it's a good solid 63 days of racing before he even starts. It's, you know, so he doesn't really have to do a great deal else, does he?
No, outside of signing his own shoes and whatever else. And I think he did win a stage at the Giro a few years ago, from memory serves, in poor conditions, so if you do that many and you get used to the rhythm, he might have more opportunities doing 3 Grand Tours a year as opposed to smaller stage races where he's just working for Andre Greipel or someone else.
He's also a bit of an IT whiz, isn't he? He designs the software package that the team uses to organise all their logistics.
Yeah, he's got a few things like that and fashion, and he's interesting. He's one of those riders that if he stopped cycling tomorrow, I think he'd still have a very successful career doing something else.
I mean, we played a very brief clip of him yesterday, and he wouldn't be drawn at all on how many Grand Tours, how long he wants to keep this record going for. But I know it's Gazzetta dello Sport today quoted him as saying he was aiming for 23 in a row. He's on 14. This is his 14th, and he told them he's going to go for 23. I don't know if it was Ciro Scognamiglio managed to get this out of him or somebody else, but 23.
Well, that's the rest of this season, next season, and the season after, isn't it?
It's more than that. 20. He's on 14 now. So let's do a bit of basic maths here.
So this is 15.
Next year will be. So this will be 15, 16, 17. Next year will be 18, 19, 20. The year after will be 21, 22, 23. Yeah, so two more seasons after this one, yeah.
Extraordinary.
Doable, I guess. I don't know. I've never heard him say
23. You've never done it yourself.
I think it's too late for us to even try, isn't it, Rich?
Probably, yeah, yeah. Anything else today? Anything else catch your eye? You did speak to Mikel Landa, didn't you, at the end? Lionel.
Yeah, should we play a little clip of Landa? A disappointing day for Team Sky's leader, but just to give a bit of context, he has been saying, as Daniel pointed out on Twitter, he has been making a point that he's a bit of a slow starter in the Grand Tours. Got off to a slow start in the Giro last year and was a minute and so behind Alberto Contador at this stage last year, and they'd had a similar kind of amount of climbing, although not quite the same sort of big uphill finish, but they had three sort of medium mountain stages early on, so probably not too much to worry about. But this is what Mikel Landa of Team Sky said afterwards.
I'm happy because without the best feelings, we don't lose too much time, so I think it's positive. We are looking between Nibali, me and Valverde, and the other riders take that advantage. The Giro, to win today is not the day for winning the Giro, also for losing.
So that was Mikel Landa after today's stage. It's a fairly straightforward day again tomorrow. But looking further ahead, Sophie, we've given our predictions. What's your prediction for the race? You've got the advantage of being several days into it now, and there's a sort of pattern emerging. Who do you think is going to win?
For the race overall or the stage tomorrow?
Race overall.
The race overall. I wasn't expecting that question.
Hang on, I just told you while we were listening to Mikel Landa that I was going to ask you that question.
You told me we were talking about tomorrow's stage and sprinters.
Ah, were you going to mention Caleb Ewan?
I was going to mention Caleb Ewan because I did speak to him this morning about how his first Giro was going. I think he's found it a bit more of a step up than the Vuelta, which he started last year. He hasn't done a lot of racing in Europe either. And the depth of competition here is something he mentioned with Marcel Kittel and Andre Greipel, and even Greipel saying Kittel's in a stratosphere of his own at the moment. Race overall, I'm trying to think and talk at the same time.
And listen to your phone.
Yeah, and listen to my phone. Look at a start list.
Be brave. Say Dumoulin.
Lionel, can you go to Lionel and come back to me?
Lionel's already said who he thinks is going to win.
Who have you both said?
That would be telling.
Can I come back like in tomorrow's podcast? And have
this is outrageous. Just simple. Just plot.
Because after we said today was going to be the first test, and I thought you would get more of an indication of who was where, but it was kind of, as we've mentioned earlier, like inverted commas, mountaintop finish.
Just pluck a name.
Rich is clearly not letting you off here.
Really not.
Pick somebody from the first half dozen and be done with it.
I'll say Landa.
Mikel Landa.
Yeah, I'll put it out there. He's got a handy bunch of climbers behind him. I haven't properly had a look.
No, well, what have you been doing? While you've been here at the Giro?
I've just been taking it day by day, as they say.
Excellent. Okay, approach. Landa. No, but you know, we were talking today. We've not spoken at all really about Team Sky and Landa, and we've spoken about Valverde, Flying Bull Radar, but they have, and you know, it is a long race, and the third week that team could especially come into its own. Shall we wrap things up there?
Better had, yeah.
We've got to get on. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Sophie. Hopefully you'll be able to join us again some night.
I would love to. Thank you for having me.